I told you this morning that I always enjoyed watching the Grinch Who Stole Christmas. I think probably the funniest part was when he dressed up his ugly dog to look like a reindeer. And if you remember that movie, well, the man who really tried to kill Christmas is a man that we want to talk about tonight. It wasn't the Grinch. As a matter of fact, this man was more ruthless and unloving than Scrooge or the Grinch. In fact, he tried to kill Christmas. Now, the story that unfolds for us in the book of Matthew chapter 2 is a bizarre and strange story, and it certainly doesn't sound right when we see all around us the beautiful poinsettias up here, the beautiful fireplace up here. And by the way, if you were to come up tonight, you'd have got warmer. But anyway, but you see all the things that people are doing nowadays to celebrate and enjoy the festivity of the occasion. And people are singing songs like we've been singing tonight. What child is this? Joy to the world, and hark the herald angels sing. Oh, come all ye faithful, and we do that because it's the Christmas season. And we always endeavor to try to decorate the auditorium, and our hearts are full of excitement. But there was one man who did not share that excitement. In fact, he got pretty angry about the whole thing that we call Christmas. He's not a make-believe character like the Grinch or perhaps maybe like Scrooge or others. He's the man that history calls Herod the Great. The Great. His story is told in the book of Matthew chapter 2. He was born politically and well connected in his family. If you know anything historically about Herod, and by the way, the reason I wanted to tell you a little bit about Herod tonight is to give you a little deeper understanding about who this man was. He was destined for what some called a life of hardball and power brokering, and that he did. At age 25, he was named the governor of Galilee. And you will remember that it was before Herod that Jesus would stand facing the death sentence. He had a high position for such a young man. The Romans were hoping that Herod would control the Jews and live in that particular area. And in 40 BC, the Roman Senate actually named him the King of the Jews. Now, you can understand why he would get all upset when the Magi, or perhaps when the wise men from the east would travel great distances to come and see this man, why he got all upset about it? Because he was born the king of the Jews. Herod was not born the king of the Jews. It was a title, actually, that the Jews hated very much because Herod was even anything but religious or spiritual at all. He was the embodiment of a villain. He exhibited all of the horrible characteristics that we read of him throughout the Bible. Now, I want to share with you tonight what I really believe after reading this story kind of sums up his life and gives us an overall picture of who Herod was. And perhaps maybe characteristics that exhibited for us the real Herod as we read him in the Bible. This man, first of all, was preoccupied with power. He was a power broker. He was a power grabber. He wanted power more than anything else. He was addicted to power, if you will. He had been described as a man who was actually obsessed with power. And someone said it this way, that if it were an alcoholic beverage, that Herod would have passed out on the floor drunk. Herod was the epitome of power. His life actually could be summed up in three words. You could say that he was capable, that he was crafty, and that he was cruel. He arranged relationships, and he had all kinds of conduits in that particular time, a day and age, for power. And he would do anything to grasp just a little bit more power. I guess you could say in his day, he had his czars also. And if he wanted to issue some kind of presidential or kingly proclamation, he did it also. Sounds like some other folks we know about. His craftiness had no barriers. And because he had a morbid mistrust of anyone who might aspire to take his throne, he was also known as a cruel man. Historically, Herod killed a lot of people. As a matter of fact, he even killed his brother-in-law, his mother-in-law, two of his sons, and even his own wife. That's how ruthless this man was. Human life didn't really mean anything to him at all. He was described by some as barbaric. He was described by another as a man who was actually a total idiot and a maniac because he was so obsessed with power. He would have done anything for just a little bit more power. But secondly, Herod was preoccupied with possessions. In one way, he was kind of like King Solomon in the Old Testament. He had anything in the world that he wanted. Herod, however, wanted it all. He wanted everything that a Roman Caesar might have. I guess you could say he had the knack of a Donald Trump, and he had a lot of things. During his lifetime, this Herod that we're talking about built 7 palaces, 7 theaters, one of which seated 9,500 people, and he even built stadiums for sporting events, and believe it or not, he built one stadium that would seat over 300,000 people. Now, we thought that was something that happened in today's world. Why, it would make the AT&T Stadium look like the Palestine Civic Center. But this man was obsessed with possessions, he was. He would do anything in the world to get his hands on a little bit more denarii, a little bit more money, a few more things, because he was wrapped up in the world. That's where he lived. Herod was not a spiritual person at all. That's why the man didn't value life. And he didn't value those that had a relationship with God. He would do anything in the world. That's why he hated the Jews. And that's why they hated him. But this man was not only preoccupied with power and possessions, he was preoccupied with prestige. Now, Herod was a very prestigious person, and so when the three wise men, or we don't know that there were three, we know that there were three different gifts that were brought. We don't know how many there are. Most of the depictions that we see show that there are three, but we don't really know the answer to that question. But when these men are referred to as the Magi, actually come from the east, and they inquire of Herod in Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 and 2, they said that we have seen his star in the east, and we have come to see the newborn king. Herod was one who loved to make an impression upon other people. He built huge and monstrous cities, state-of-the-art architecture at that particular time and amenities, and named them after those that he loved and his superiors even. He was also a very smooth talker and had a very special ability to win over his opponents. Well, I mean, he charmed other people with his oratory, and he didn't even have to have a teleprompter. Several of his 10 marriages, I better stop that, I'm getting a little bit too political. Several of his 10 marriages were prestige-oriented and politically motivated. He married women for political power again and for prestige. He once married the daughter of a leading rival in order to gain prestige and power, because he desired it so much. The thing that was important to him was prestige. He wanted people to name him when he walked down the street or when he entered into Jerusalem. He wanted the Jews to know who he was. But there's something strange about this man that is called the King of the Jews. Called the King of the Jews. For he was a man who was preoccupied with paranoia as well. You ever been around people that are paranoid? I've been around people that are paranoid. You know, they think everybody's out to get them. They think everybody's ready to do them harm. And perhaps maybe there was a little bit justification for Herod's feeling about this because his own father, who was a king, by the way, had been poisoned. And so Herod, through his life, became obsessed with paranoia. He went to great lengths to make sure nobody put anything in his soup and that he wasn't going to die at the hands of someone else. He became a king and commissioned tens of thousands of slaves to build what we call 10 emergency fortresses to make sure that that did not happen. He established elaborate networks for spies. He had his own CIA, if you will. For his own protection, not for the protection of Caesar or the province of Judea, but for himself. And anyone who would plot to dethrone Herod was sniffed out and eliminated very quickly. He ruled for more than 40 years until he clashed with another king, one who was also called and named the King of Kings. When all of this happens in the book of Matthew chapter 2, Herod the Great, the king of the Jews, is slowly dying, we're told historically, of a disease. His body was suddenly racked with convulsions. His breath is foul. His skin is covered with open sores, and he is rapidly losing his mind. But he is still the king. And when word comes to him that there are some visitors in town who are inquiring about this king who is born, Herod gets a little upset. For these were strange men with a strange question. They ask him that question. And we're told in Matthew chapter 2 and verse 2 that it literally shook him to the core. Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? They said, we saw his star in the east, and we have come to worship him. You see, they were looking for someone that was born the king of the Jews. Herod was probably thinking in his own mind, what is all of this about? For he himself was not born a king. He had to fight and kill and do anything in the world that he could to get the power and the prestige and the popularity that he possessed. Why didn't the spies tell him about this young boy that was going to be born and would claim his own throne? Well, in Matthew chapter 2, the Bible says that Herod was disturbed. And by the way, not only Herod, but all of Jerusalem was disturbed. In the Greek, it literally meant that they were shaking violently. You can only imagine. He had finally subdued all of his enemies, and yet now there is another son, a young son. Don't know exactly how old he is, but Herod had issued the decree that all children that were 2 years and younger be killed. He wasn't taking any chances with anyone. There was no time to rest for Herod. No one knew what this wacko might do. Now, even though Herod is old in this story, you have to remember these three words that characterize Herod: capable, crafty, and cruel. He knew somewhere in the ancient oracles that he had read that there was a prediction of the exact place where this Messiah of the Jews would be born, this one of God. So he called together those religious leaders and the ministers and wanted to find out what the Bible had to say really about this coming king. Specifically, he wanted to know where he was supposed to be born, and without having to think much about it, they responded in Matthew 2, verse 5 and 6, the ancient prophecy in the book of Micah, that he's going to be born in this place called Bethlehem of Judea, for the prophet had written, "And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." You could almost see the wince on his face when he hears these words. Suddenly, things start getting real serious and troublesome to Herod. What if the boy that they have come to worship really is the one the prophets predicted would come? He must do what he had to do to take him out now. There was no time to waste. So Herod called the stargazers, if you will, secretly, and found out from them the exact time that that star appeared unto them. He sent them to Bethlehem and said in verses 7 and 8, "Go and make a careful search of the child. And as soon as you find him, report to me that I too can come and worship him." And so off they go. By the way, the star had led them, believe it or not, over 800 miles through the desert. And it miraculously reappeared and led them to the exact house that Jesus was in. Now I want you to notice something in this text. You know, most of the nativity scenes show the three men from the east, or the wise men as we call them, if you believe they're three or more. Generally they're depicted as three, as I said, who have gathered at the manger scene, which is totally false. It was impossible. This event happened much later than our Christmas cards and those nativity scenes actually depict. For the wise men did not arrive the very night that they saw that star, the night even when Jesus was born. But they had to make their way across that desert area, verse 9 says, and the star stopped where Jesus was. As a matter of fact, when it talks about the child there, it uses the word in the Greek language, which actually means toddler. It's not a baby in a manger anymore. That's why Herod really was upset about it. That's why he had all children killed at age 2 and younger. Now, these men brought unusual gifts to Jesus when they got there. Three gifts are specifically mentioned. Gold. And you might wonder why they gave such gifts. You know, sometimes you don't know what to buy one another for Christmas. But they knew what they were going to give. They gave gold because gold was what you would give to a king. One brought frankincense. And frankincense, being a spice, also was what you would give to a priest. And myrrh was what you would use at a funeral to place on a body. I guess you could say they were giving Jesus his flowers while he lived. One thing about this story, verse 10 mentions that they came to the house where Jesus was. Now, how hard is that to grasp? When all these depictions show these wise men at the manger scene, if you just go back to the Holy Scriptures, you understand they never were at the manger scene. But the star appeared over the house where Jesus was. There's no mention in this text of a stable, no mention of a manger at all. Jesus and his parents were in someone's house. Now, the mysterious men from the east knew something Herod would never, ever know. Even though he was powerful, and even though he was prestigious, and even though he had possessions, they knew something that Herod did not know. For they knew that someday this Jesus, this Son of God, would rule the world. They were not ashamed to give him gifts fit for a king. And just before the wise men, as we call them, step off of center stage and drift into the twilight of history, we are told one last fact about them in verse 12. The Bible says, having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their own country by another route. This butcher of Bethlehem almost eradicated Christmas. But God did not allow it to happen. Do you know the world tonight is still trying to eradicate Christmas? Some people don't even like the mention of the word. They don't even like to hear the words Merry Christmas, and many of them have substituted Merry Christmas for Happy Holidays. And many of the retailers in America tonight do not even mention the name Mary or Christ in Merry Christmas because they don't want to be associated in a religious way or talk about a relationship with the Son of God. Their very reason that many of them are still in business. And I'm going to tell you something. Many businesses would fold if it were not for the money that is spent at Christmas. Many retailers would go out of business. Now, I'm going to tell you something. You wait till January gets here. All the folks in Washington are going to be talking about how many jobs we created in the month of December. And they're going to talk about the economy, how it's swelling, and people are buying again. Facetious and a bunch of hogwash. I'm glad that God in his own wisdom preserved what we call Christmas. Dwight prayed tonight. We may not know exactly when it is, but we know it is. And we know it happened, and thank God that it did. And I'm thankful tonight that we can have a relationship with this Jesus. People like to talk about Jesus in the manger, but we don't talk much about our relationship with the one who went to the cross for us and shed his blood. That's the one I have a relationship with tonight. It's not the one necessarily that was born in the manger, but the one who lived his life and served as a tremendous example to us to follow him. You have that privilege tonight to have a relationship with this King of the Jews. But he is King of all, King of kings, and Lord of lords. And no one, shall ever take him off of his throne. You can believe it. So if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, let me invite you to have a relationship with Christ through an obedient heart that yields to the commands of Jesus Christ to become a Christian and water baptism and raised in the likeness of our Savior. And if you're a child of God and you've strayed from that relationship, then God receives you, welcomes you back while we stand and while we sing.